Are you an older, non-traditional, potential med school applicant burned out on your profession? Are you thinking about medicine, but worried about starting over? Just getting in? Hear how one PhD with approximately 8 years of experience as an environmental engineer got accepted to her first choice medical school.
Welcome to Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. Your host is Accepted's founder and world-renowned admissions guru, Linda Abraham. At Accepted, our mission is to get you to that unforgettable moment when you read your acceptance email and shout, "Yes, I'm in!" Confident you'll be attending the perfect program to help you launch the career of your dreams.
Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining me for this, the 364th episode of Admissions Straight Talk. Many of you are now working on or about to submit your MCAS application and working feverishly on your personal statement. And I have just what the doctor ordered to help you with it. ACE the MCAS essay. It's a free download that Accepted provides med school applicants. And much of the advice is also good for the ACOMAS and TMD SAS personal statements. Grab your copy at accepted.com/364download. Our guest today mastered that personal statement and is shortly going to begin medical school. However, she has a distinctly non-traditional path. Valerie Fuchs earned her BS in civil engineering and her PhD in environmental engineering and did a postdoc fellowship at Yale. For the last 8 years, she has worked as a water resources engineer. And this summer, she is starting medical school. Valerie, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you, Linda.
Pleasure to have you. Now, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, where you grew up, you know, that kind of stuff?
Sure. I grew up in Spokane, Washington. I am the oldest of five kids from a big Catholic family, went to Catholic grade school over there, and then moved on to Gonzaga University, not far from home. I always kind of had that interest in math and science, I guess, and had cousins who were engineers and thought, well, you know, I'll try this out and see how it goes. Really got interested in civil engineering with the sort of soil and water science and those kind of things. And I thought, you know, as I went through school, that what I really wanted to do was be able to help people in terms of kind of water and sanitation, developing communities in particular. And that's the direction I ended up going into grad school, where I studied sanitation for developing communities, so wastewater treatment in Bolivia and other countries in South America. And kind of moved through that process, did research and a whole doctoral dissertation on it. And then I kind of continued that, but looking at stormwater at when I was at Yale for a year before transitioning into consulting engineering. And I've been a consultant for about 10 years now. Been an interesting process. I've moved all over the country, did a lot of research and work in different countries in Central and South America. And then finally, about 4 or 5 years ago, actually it's been 6 years ago now, I decided I wanted to be back close to family and move back to Seattle. And I've been here ever since.
Wow. It's also interesting that it was water that you chose to focus on, because of course, Washington State, specifically Seattle area, has tons of rain and water.
Oh yeah. And, yep.
Yeah. Is that like Southern California, where there's always a water shortage and drought is there every year? There's worries about drought. It's the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I spent a couple of years in California in Sacramento and was working on water supply issues while I was there. So yeah, the water issues are a little different depending on wherever you are. Definitely.
Right. Now you got interested in water. You became an engineer. What made you start thinking that engineering isn't for you and that medicine is?
It's kind of funny how that happened. I had really started a few years ago feeling like, even though engineering is a great sort of intellectual challenge for me, I wanted to be engaging more with people. And my day-to-day work as an engineer is mostly sitting at a computer, you know, crunching numbers on different types of projects. I wanted to be really doing something that would be a lot more one-on-one with people, potentially helping them improve their lives in some way. So I started looking at a variety of different options. I considered teaching high school science. I looked at becoming a massage therapist, a variety of different things. And it wasn't until in August of 2016, my mom became ill and then passed away of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Thank you. I spent about 3 weeks with her in the hospital and in hospice, and kind of all stress aside, I found myself really intrigued by just observing her care team, her neurologist, and the internists that were helping they were just so engaged with us, with her, with our family, engaged with us, compassionate towards us, and doing so much hard work to try to figure out what this really rare disease was that she had.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask you, what was the name of the disease again? Because I didn't quite catch it.
It's Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. And if you've heard, probably 10 or 20 years ago, there was a lot of news about mad cow disease.
Yes.
So it's basically the human form of that. And it really means that there's a prion, a certain protein in the brain, a prion protein. It changes form, and that causes a domino effect of these other ones to change form. And that creates kind of holes in the brain. So it's just a neurodegenerative disease that can happen really fast. That usually occurs to people in their 60s, and it's extremely rare, and they don't know why it comes or why it happens or how to cure it. So yeah, it was really out of nowhere. She was the kind of person that everybody thought was going to live till she was 90, super witty and intelligent and kept herself really active. And no one ever would have thought that would happen. But yeah, her doctors were just really incredible. And I found myself sort of jokingly at that time thinking, wow, maybe I should become a neurologist. You know, look how much they're engaging with people and doing this amazing work. And the idea just sort of grabbed hold and didn't let go. And it sort of, you know, just got stuck in my head. So I began over the last several years shadowing other doctors, other physicians. I volunteered at a hospice, spending time with hospice patients, and at a local emergency department here in Seattle to start to see what different sides of medicine look like and see if that's something that I really would be interested in. And taking, you know, of course, the prereqs and everything. So I guess it was through that process. You know, that period with my mom was kind of the little trigger, the inkling. And then over the last 2 years has been that process of really finding out if that interest was true. And I'm so excited about it. So I've never felt this level of passion about engineering, as great as of a career as it's been. And I'm just so excited that, you know, I don't think it's that common for people to find the thing that they really want to spend the rest of their life doing. And I feel like this is it for me.
That's fantastic. I actually have a cousin. He's now finished with medical school, but in his late 20s, he was a computer scientist, computer engineer, programmer, and he's Israeli. And of course, that industry is like fantastic in Israel. And his father was a doctor. And he says, you know, I just feel empty inside. He told his father, and I think I want to be a doctor. And his older brothers were discouraging him. He said, you got a good profession. Why are you going to leave it and, you know, incur all this debt and all this stuff? His father said, look, if this is what you really want to do, go for it. And he did. He did. Yeah. And he's now, I think he's actually going for a PhD also at the moment in hematology oncology. Wow. I know exactly how old he is. Let me think about it. He's 39. He's just doing it. It's what he gives him satisfaction. He's very happy he did it. No regrets whatsoever. It can work out. I interviewed a few years ago a woman physician who was at that point doing, I think, a fellowship. And she also had started her training. She wouldn't tell me how old she was or when exactly she started it, but it was obvious that she'd had a couple of careers before she decided it was medicine that was her calling. And she was very happy and very excited about what she was doing. Mm-hmm. Now, what was the hardest part of the application process for you in terms of, was it the decision? Was it the test? Was it the applying? Was it the prerequisites? What did you find most difficult?
I have to say, in the end, I would, you know, looking back now, there were a lot of hard parts, but looking back now, I would say that the most challenging thing was the secondary application for all the schools, because it's just compounds to so many essays. And I worked really hard. I didn't just like recycle one into the other from, you know, if it's the same topic. I worked really, really hard to tailor each one. So I had, you know, material that I was starting with if I already wrote on a topic, but I worked really hard to tailor it for each school. And the process of keeping track of all of them, trying to make sure that it was exactly what I wanted to say and not come across saying something different, and trying to tailor it for each school so that I could feel totally confident that every single application that I submitted was my best effort. I mean, it was just a grind. It was so exhausting.
How many schools did you apply to?
I applied to 20 schools. So I actually applied 2 years. The first year I wasn't accepted anywhere. I interviewed twice and wasn't accepted anywhere. And that year I applied to 14. The second year, I applied to 20 and interviewed at 6.
What did you do differently between the two application cycles that you feel made a difference?
I can tell you exactly what made a difference. The first time I applied, I had only had about 50 hours of shadowing and about 50 hours of clinical experience. And I don't think it's specific numbers. There's not a threshold of specific numbers of hours that you have to have. But it was pretty clear in my essays and in my interview responses that my understanding and experience of the medical profession was naive, I think, and not very much experience. And luckily, after that first round, that first application year, one school was willing to give me feedback. And in fact, they have a process of they'll forward. I think for most students who request it, you can get a half hour phone call with the dean of admissions. And I mean, she kind of read me the file of their responses or their thoughts on my application and interview. And what they really said was, you need more clinical experience. That's the main thing. And so I went out and got it. That was I've added the volunteering at the emergency department after that. And I really spent some time thinking over the next year, how are these different clinical experiences impacting me? What about this really makes me want to go into medicine? What turns me off? Why do I think this is helping me make my decision? And that thinking about that in depth really helped me write better application essays and, you know, have deeper responses in my interviews. And I think it was really clear that the feedback was a lot better. Well, or an acceptance is the best feedback you can get. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you can't argue with that. You cannot argue with that. Do you feel there were distinct challenges that you faced as an older applicant, a non-traditional applicant coming from another field, a very distinctive different field?
Yeah, you know, I think there were both distinct challenges and distinct benefits. Challenge-wise, I did feel, it's hard to provide, you know, really concrete examples of this, but I did feel like sometimes almost like the bar was higher for me. And is that because I'm older or is it because I have a PhD? I don't know. I felt like when I would talk with other pre-meds who are younger and maybe just in, you know, finishing undergrad and what their experience was like interacting with admissions committees, I felt like more was expected of me in terms of my ability to think through this whole process and sort of prove myself in terms of what I was capable of and what I wanted to do. I mean, sometimes that felt sort of frustrating. At the same time, I was like, this is what I want to do, so I'm going to prove it. On the other hand, I also felt like my age maybe and level of experience means that I've dealt with interpersonal problems a lot in terms of professional work and teams and, you know, those kind of things. And some of the like MMI types of scenarios, I felt totally comfortable because I've been doing that kind of thing for years at work. So there were different ways where I felt like my level of experience actually was a huge benefit to me. And it helped me overcome those challenges that might have been because of my age.
Well, I keep trying to say that age is maturity.
Right.
That would be the advantage and the strength of it. And maybe that is means that automatically there was certain expectations of you that would be inappropriate of a 22 or a 23-year-old.
I think there is some level maybe of, and maybe in some senses this is appropriate, that schools want, generally speaking, a younger, you know, cohort that has a long career path ahead of them. I can see the benefit of that for the most part, but at the same time, also having a well-rounded class of lots of different age and experience, and that makes for a well-rounded whole professional group moving forward. So I think there's benefits both ways.
Right. You, when you were approaching the MCAS or the secondaries for that matter, were you trying to balance bringing out your professional achievements and kind of the benefits of your training and your clinical exposure? I mean, you didn't really want to ignore either one, I would assume.
I would say with MCAS, you know, in the personal statement, I only referred to my engineering background in terms of helping tell my story. I didn't really spend a lot of time emphasizing it because in terms of that personal statement of why do you want to go to medical school, it was just a point in my trajectory. Mm-hmm. It's an important point because I'm clearly somebody who's coming from a different place than a lot of other people, but I didn't really spend a lot of time talking about it. I really spent more time, and this was actually with one of your consultants at accepted.com, got a lot of help in from Barry Rothman, and really helped in really figuring out how to tell the story of what my clinical experience, especially my time with some of my hospice patients, yes, meant to me in terms of why I wanted to become a doctor. Yeah, I think with that personal statement, it was more directed towards the experience, the clinical experience side. The activities portion of the AMCAS application was really a balance. I emphasized a lot more of the professional, my professional background, because that's where I could talk about awards and experiences and teamwork service. And service and the variety of things that I've done. And I also use that area to talk about some of my more personal activities and hobbies. I think to me, the point was to develop as much of a well-rounded picture of me as I could for readers to get a sense of who I am. And then in the secondaries, I'm trying to remember, it really depended on the school, but I wanted to emphasize I'm bringing this experience of having a professional career, and this is what that means in terms of being a potential mentor to my classmates and a team member and knowing how to focus and study and manage my time and all of those kind of things. And then I think, well, I guess it just depended on the secondary question, you know, was I going to emphasize my professional background or the clinical experience? And every school was different.
I think that the way you balance makes a lot of sense. You focus your personal statement on why you want to be a physician today and what experiences prepared you for that, but then allow the activity mm-hmm. descriptions to show some breadth and kind of what you're going to bring to the table, not just what you have in common with others. That makes a lot of sense to me. Now, you mentioned that in terms of the secondaries that you found them very, you know, very challenging because you wanted to tailor each one to the individual medical school, which is exactly what you should have done. And again, you can't argue with the acceptances and the interview invitations also. That meant that your applications did their jobs. Any tips for like staying just on top of the wave, surfing the wave of secondary applications? Any tips for people?
Well, being an engineer, I'm a big proponent of spreadsheets.
Okay.
And I had a really massive spreadsheet that I started. So I submitted my AMCAS application the very first day that it was open and available to submit. And I think I took a little bit of a break, you know, a week or two maybe. And then I started collecting the questions for all of the schools. You know, most of the schools, you can look back at previous years online and find there's not very many schools that change year to year. So I could find most of the questions for all 20 schools. And I just started basically collating those. Here's the 5 questions for each school or however many it is. This is what topic each one is on. And then I could start to look at, okay, this, you know, these are similar topics. This is how I want to. So I started early in terms of collecting and organizing the questions and starting to map out topics and jot down ideas for what I wanted to write about. And honestly, the second time around, I had the first year's questions to start with that I had, you know, written.
Yeah, you had
first year. So I had some material to work with, but then it was really just tracking, you know, okay, this is the document where I have the answers for this school. And, okay, you know, how many times have I gone through this? Have I edited it? Have I had someone else review it? Have I gotten responses and started to, you know, revise? So I did, you know, it was several revisions for each school. And then by time I started receiving the actual secondary applications for each school, I was trying to turn them around within a week. Some of them I could turn around really fast. Other ones took a little longer, but it was just kind of staying at it really hard. And over about, I think it probably took me a total of 6 weeks between receiving the first application and getting them, you know, the last one submitted. But it was just sort of like organization and diligence and getting help. I had some help. I did not do this myself. I had some editing, both professional consultants and my own family and friends that really supported me. So,
well, that's great. That's great. Now, you said that you had 6 interviews out of the 20 schools that you applied to. How did you prepare for your interviews?
Well, kind of similarly, So Dr. Ryan Gray of Med School HQ has a book on the interview, preparing for the interview. So I used that. I looked at a lot of common sort of interview questions online. And then for each school, as much information I could find of how they tailor their interview. and what kind of questions they asked specifically. I really spent time writing out answers for each type of interview question or every specific interview question I could find for those schools, just so I knew I had thought through it. And then I think I did one mock interview online. And no, it was, I went with a different company that I can't remember the name of right now. I wanted somebody actually who was not familiar with my application to make it more like, you know, a school interview where they were just fresh to it. And then I spent a lot of time actually just recording myself answering questions so that I felt comfortable not stuttering and getting some of these stories out, like, why do you want to become a doctor? And tell us about yourself. Those general, you know, those really basic kinds of questions where I felt like I was comfortably saying the things I wanted to say, not rote or any by memory or anything, but just saying the things I wanted to say without stuttering and clearly and within a reasonable time frame.
And what are your plans for between now and the start of med school?
Well, COVID-19's got that all up in the air.
Yeah, a lot of other things too.
I was planning to get married in June, but I think we're going to postpone because we don't know if any of our guests are going to be able to travel here. And then we were going to do a month-long honeymoon in Italy, and that doesn't look good either. So I think I'll probably work until the end of July and then take a few weeks off and, I don't know, paint my condo and get ready for school to start at the end of August. Nothing too exciting right now. And then we'll hopefully have a wedding maybe next summer.
Okay. I mentioned to offline that we just had a grandson, you know, the baby comes, COVID-19 or not, right? So we something for the baby yesterday. We're Jewish. We had a circumcision ceremony for him. It was actually very interesting. We couldn't have anybody other than immediate family, meaning the baby, his mother, father, siblings, and then my husband and I, because as I explained to you before, they were actually living with us, and then the rabbi. We invited my son-in-law is a rabbi, so he had his congregation, and we sent out a Zoom meeting. There were 100 people there, and then there were people all over who attended, not just from my son-in-law's congregation, but from family that live in other parts of the world, from friends that we have. We would never have included them because we said, you know, they're not local. And because of this, it was this thing of, you know, being alone together. They obviously had time on their hands because they couldn't go anywhere. And so they participated.
Well, that's great. Yeah. We joked that we would live stream our wedding from, you know, the Bahamas or somewhere. But I don't know. I think by the end of all this COVID stuff, we'll be ready to have a big, really big celebration. And
that's for sure. That's for sure. Anyway, there's so much hard stuff going on now that it was nice. I think everybody just enjoyed a little tiny baby all that. Any last bits of wisdom or advice for MBA wannabes, especially those who are perhaps leaving an established profession and a little bit older?
Well, I would just say that, that when I first started thinking about this, I was thinking about the prereqs that I would have to take and the MCAT. And I didn't start on looking for a clinical experience until a little bit later. And that was honestly the more important thing. Studying for the MCAT was a lot of work and taking these prereqs and stuff. But the more important thing was to really confirm this interest and also be able to explain that to medical schools. So I would say that for anybody who's starting to think about it, go get that experience first or find the way to do it, which is, I know that's really hard right now in the time of COVID-19 because all the hospitals are saying we can't have volunteers and no shadowing and all of that. But, you know, as soon as that those types of things are available or get creative about it and get that experience and really confirm that desire early.
Right. So. We're actually putting together now, by the time the podcast goes live, we'll have it, a resource where not so much clinical exposure, because that is limited at the moment, where every state, many cities have like volunteer information networks, basically, where anybody can go and look up what are the volunteer opportunities, what are the needs in my community or my state or my city. And that is specifically, so, you know, if you want to volunteer, it doesn't have to be in a hospice. It doesn't have to be in an ER, especially if you can't do it. Yeah. Just go do something that's needed.
Yeah. And I think I would add to that, that a lot of people are, you know, it seems like a lot of people are trying to check a box like, oh, is this going to look good on the application? Yeah. And I would say all of my interview conversations, they really wanted to know the things I'm passionate about. And, you know, they wanted to know why I do some of my hobbies. And admissions committees are looking for people who are people, you know, that are have a variety of interests and are going to bring a variety of backgrounds to the class. And so not only find volunteer positions that are going to help somebody in the community, but also do the things you're passionate about. Volunteer, yes, but also keep a hobby going, of whether it's sailing or mountain climbing or knitting or whatever it might be, the thing you're passionate about, stick with it.
Is there anything you wish I would have asked you? I think your closing was just great just now, but is there something that you wish I would have asked you?
No, I can't think of anything. That was great. I think we covered a lot.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Well, Valerie, I think we're running out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining me for this podcast. And thanks for your experience and perspective, and good luck with medical school.
Thank you, Linda. Happy to be here, and I'm really looking forward to the future.
Thanks again, Valerie. We're going to link to the resources I mentioned earlier that are related to this podcast from mixup.com/364. And we're going to include in those resources the free guide, Ace the MCAS Essay. You can download your free copy at mixup.com/364download. Listener, thank you too for tuning into this, our 364th episode. If you found this show worthwhile, please make sure you don't miss any others. Subscribe through your favorite podcatcher. We have subscribe links in the show notes at mixup.com/364. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.